Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
You want to be able to do it all.
It's a lot of great energy.
Upbeat and going forward and excited.
Fun and juice, man. And we're going to get down to business.
From our studios in the Coin Tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is coverage of the National Football League you won't find anywhere else. This is Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus on the Coin Podcast Network.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Out of the Tunnel with your host Marcus Greaves and AJ McCord. Week 7 just wrapped up in the NFL. And of course, we're joined by Miss AJ McCord. AJ, what's up, girl? How you feeling today?
I am good, my friend. I feel like I've said this the last 3 weeks, but I really cannot believe that we are through week 7 already of the NFL season.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how it's going by so fast, but I think it's probably because every single game seems to be extremely entertaining. Not every single game, but most games, for the most part, they're pretty entertaining. I mean, whether it be, you know, the Falcons mishaps every other week, Daniel Jones tripping on his.
Oh my gosh! I never related to an NFL player more than that moment. That was like all of us on New Year's Eve this year. We're like, yeah, let's go 2020, and then bam,
and then day, yeah,
smacked in March. February.
I loved it. That was probably the most entertaining thing I've seen in a long time. I probably watched that like 10 times. The funniest part about that real quick is that they said that he was moving. Like, he was moving fast. He had, I think they clocked him faster than Tyreek Hill.
What?
So, like, yes, I'm not kidding.
No.
I'm not kidding. You know how the NFL does their, like, you know, he ran like 21.2 miles per hour. He beat Tyreek Hill by like.
When Tyreek Hill was walking or what?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was like, there's no chance that he did that. But then again, when you go back and watch it, nobody was even close, and he just fell, just like that. When that happens in football practice, I already know that's going to be on their in their film room, like, for the next 2 months.
It's going to be a gif. It's going to be on loop. Loop. Just the falling. They're not going to show him running. They're just going to show the falling.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal, but at least this NFL season is entertaining. So, AJ, jumping into our top headlines, let's start off with Odell Beckham, star receiver out of Cleveland. It is such heartbreaking news. He tears his ACL. He's out for the season. I 100% understand and know exactly how that happens and how that works. The feeling and the recovery time. I've been through it twice. It is extremely brutal. And Odell Beckham, about to be 28, I think, in the next few weeks. That's going to be huge because now Cleveland kind of has to decide what they want to do with Odell Beckham in the future. But AJ, overall, just give us your thoughts on the situation.
Oh, it's just brutal. The Browns just cannot catch a break. This is the season they started to turn it around, and they look good. They look lucky, at least. And now you got OBJ out, and you just talk about a journey through the NFL. I hate it for him, but I think even though he is 28, I mean, the guy's got so much talent. And if we've learned nothing from the Antonio Brown saga, it's that not much matters if you're really good at football. And OBJ does not have nearly the same off the field persona and problems that Antonio Brown has. And so, you know, and he just signed his deal with the Bucks. So I hate it for the Browns, hate it for their fans. Sorry, CJ McCollum. I know that one hurts you. OBJ will come back. The dude's ridiculous. And now it's just a route for recovery, and, you know, similar to when we saw Dak go down, it was cool to see the guys around the league just have some respect and have some, you know, like, reaching out to OBJ and encouraging him in that moment.
Right, and that's just kind of what happens with the ACL. It's going to take some time. I know recovery is at least a year, so we'll see how he comes back, and hopefully he can come back full strength, and if not, even better. AJ, some other news. Let's talk about the Titans and the Steelers. This was a game between two heavy-hitting, hard-nosed, just dog football teams. At first, the Steelers were blowing out the Titans. It was, I want to say it was 24-3 at one point, and I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah, the Titans are kind of, you know, they're not really the team that we thought they were. But the Steelers are good, AJ, and at the end of the day, that's what happens is that these two teams, when you go against each other, excuse me, I know Mike Vrabel, his very first NFL coaching job was with the Steelers. So you know that they're going to bring the two kind of same mentalities with Mike Tomlin and his Steelers. So Steelers win that one 27-24, and at the end of the day, kickers seem to miss the most important field goals every single time. It's insane to me, but you kind of just figured at this point, if it's late in the game, someone, you need 3 points or whatever it is, and you leave it up to the kicker, they're probably going to let you down. I'm not trying to be rude to any of the kickers, but that's just kind of what it seems like. So, AJ, give us your quick thoughts on that game.
Dude, kicking is the most thankless job in the NFL. Like, Gostkowski made a 51-yarder, I believe, earlier that game, and then missed wide right, 45. But then, again, I mean, the Titans in particular have just been it's just been brutal to watch their kicking game this season. Right. And it's crazy, though. That's only the fifth time that two undefeated teams have met in week 7 or later.
That's crazy.
It says a lot about the Titans and the Steelers. And in the previous 4 meetings, the winner of that matchup between the undefeateds in week 7 or later went to the Super Bowl.
No.
So really good news if you're a Steelers fan. Right. Their best start since 1978. And I just think that it was a fun game to watch, though, you know, like watching the Titans come back and try to make a game of it. But I agree, you never, ever, ever want to put the game in on the foot of your kicker, just because it's, like I said, it's a thankless job. It's a hard job. It's a pressure job. And there's so many things that have to go right for a kicker to be on point every single kick.
And a lot of people actually were saying something, AJ, about Derrick Henry. And I just want to touch on this right quick, because people were saying Derrick Henry only runs the way he does when he gets through the first line and he's, you know, going up against a defensive back. I just want to put in perspective how untrue that is. And one of our very own CBS analysts said that. I cannot remember which one it was, but I was very disappointed to hear that, because they said, watch Derrick Henry run. He does not run the same when guys are his size, or he doesn't run the same when teams know that the Titans are going to run. Absolutely. That's obviously because when you stack the box and, you know, you have 9 people in the box, what do you want to do? What do you want Derrick Henry to do? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing he can do. It's a numbers game. Derrick Henry still ran good. I mean, again, this is this type of thing where you put such an expectation on Derrick Henry where he had 20 carries, 75 yards, and a touchdown. That's not a horrible stat line, especially against a really good Steelers front seven. That Steelers front seven is arguably the best in the NFL. Obviously, he's not going to run for 250 yards against the best front seven in the NFL, especially when they know that if the run game gets going for the Titans, that the offense is going to get going even more. So I just had to say my quick piece because I'm tired of people disrespecting my man Derrick Henry. But
AJ, you say it.
The disrespect is it's still here, but I want to talk about the Pats. I do not know the situation with the Pats. And so this is super interesting because a storyline before the season was obviously Tom Brady left, went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bill Belichick, still the head coach of the Patriots. People said, on both sides, they say, Brady cannot win without Belichick, or Belichick can't win without Brady. You know, Tom Brady is actually a system quarterback. Look what everything the Patriots have done for him. I mean, Cam Newton is a great quarterback, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's past his prime, but he's still a very solid quarterback. The Patriots fall to 2-4 now on the season, and AJ, they do not look good by any means. And so we're not going to break down the Patriots, but I want to know, in your mind, how important do you think Brady was to the Patriots compared to maybe how important the Patriots were for Tom Brady?
Well, I think that Brady was very important, but I think it's also worth noting that they didn't replace Tom Brady with a quarterback of a similar style or even a quarterback who was performing at the same level as Tom Brady. I love Cam Newton. I've been a fan of his since his days in the league. Had some, you know, his college days were exciting. But, you know, I think Cam Newton's a great quarterback. That said, he's not had a great season. Mm-hmm. And so is this as much on, you know, Belichick and the Patriots, or is it also, do we have to take into consideration that Cam Newton is a part of the problem? I mean, he got benched on Sunday, and, you know, to his credit, he had some accountability, and one of the first things he said afterwards was, if you don't make some changes, this is going to be a permanent change where he's going to get benched. But in this season, he's had 0 games where he threw more touchdowns than he threw interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he's rushed for 4 touchdowns this season, and he's had 2 in the air, but he's thrown equal to or more interceptions than touchdowns in every game he's started this season.
Right. And I think
that's not great.
Yeah, that's definitely not. But I think something to also keep in consideration is how bad, just in general, how bad the Patriots receivers have been. I mean, Julian Edelman is a guy who, with Tom Brady, was considered one of the best. But you watch him with Cam Newton. And Tony Romo said a handful of times from the few games I've watched this season is that what is wrong with Edelman? He does not look the same. He doesn't. It doesn't look right. Like he – I mean, he's making mistakes that he hasn't made before. And maybe that's just the different leadership roles that Cam Newton has compared to Tom Brady. And we've seen Tom Brady get on his teammates' head a lot, right, where he's screaming in their face. He's throwing his helmet on the sideline. He's an angry guy, right, because he expects greatness out of his guys. Maybe Cam Newton isn't that in-your-face leader. Instead, he's like, maybe I'll lead by example, or he'll, you know, be a positive guy, you know, give you a pat on the back, say, let's go do this. But I think it's just the two different play styles from the two different QBs. And there's at the end of the day, on top of the opting out of how many guys have opted out for the Patriots defense, I mean, they're just not a good team. And it was only a matter of time. You know, they've been good for how long? Eventually, you're not going to have the same turnover that you did the season before where you had a lot of success. So, someone who is having a lot of success, AJ, and this will wrap up our top headlines around the NFL, is Mr. Justin Herbert of the L.A. Chargers. I'm sorry, AJ.
Thank you. Still stabs my heart, but I appreciate you getting it right.
AJ, I want to know your thoughts on this because, again, I will go on record every single time and say he has blown my expectations out of the water. Like, he has definitely shut my mouth up because a lot of people are in the same boat. Because when you watch him in college, you saw that he had talent. But it was kind of like a thing with Russell Wilson where you're like, man, they just don't really let him do what he can do. And now the Chargers are doing that. They just let him sometimes sit back in the pocket and bomb the ball 50 yards downfield with one of the best deep balls in the league already. So tell me, AJ, I mean, are you surprised with the success that Justin Herbert's having?
Nope. I could go back to us talking about this like before the draft, and I am almost certain that I told you the Chargers have found their franchise quarterback. Justin Herbert is going to be the answer for the Los Angeles Chargers because, well, I guess I didn't know it was the Chargers at the time, but once he was drafted to the Chargers, I knew this guy was going to succeed at the NFL, and I'll tell you why. So first and foremost, he had how many coordinators in college? Do you remember? Three. So 3 different offensive systems in college. He thrived in pretty much every single one of them. Different things, right? But he thrived. In the Rose Bowl in January, we watched him rush for multiple touchdowns. Justin Herbert had never been a mobile quarterback
right
before that game and a little bit in the Pac-12 title game. So I say this to say, we've also seen some really beautiful deep balls from him in college. So we've seen glimpses of everything that Justin Herbert has in his arsenal. But with 3 different offensive coordinators in college, there's no chance for the coordinator to really understand how to make the offense function around the quarterback. Whereas in the NFL, this is their guy. Yeah. So the Chargers are playing to every single one of Justin Herbert's strengths, and he happens to have a good number of them. You add into that this is somebody who, when I talked to him, I believe it was after his loss against the Buccaneers, we talked about his leadership. And that was something a lot of people questioned, was does this guy have the leadership skills to lead an NFL locker room filled with players who are some, you know, 10, 15 years older than him, have been in the league for a long time. This franchise in particular has been through a lot in the last decade. Does he have the ability to lead them? Yes. After every single loss, he talked about how this is not about pointing fingers. This is on us. We need to get better. We are the only guys in this locker room. We can do this. That's what you saw on Sunday. He just got the breaks that he needed from his defense to get the win that he had been producing three starts he had. So I'm not surprised at all that Justin Herbert is having this success. I am surprised only because the Chargers defense has not been great. And so that's why it's taken him so long. But I knew Justin Herbert was going to be a franchise quarterback in the NFL. His work ethic is too good. His leadership skills are too on point, and his talent is just too high to not have this kind of success.
Right. And he finished the game. He was 27-43, 347 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. And he also had 9 carries for 66 yards and a touchdown. That's one hell of a stat line, AJ. On top of that, I thought what he did a great job of is the Chargers always seem to struggle in the second half, right? The second half is where they just cannot play good. They can't get it together on offense. Defense gives up too many points. I thought this was a huge step in the right direction for Justin Herbert and the Chargers because they scored 23 points in the second half, right? That's something that they haven't that they haven't done, right? And that it was the second half that would really kill them in games. And Justin Herbert, this is where I see his progress. This is where I see his leadership coming in because he obviously understands the situation of we are not a good second half team. Let's be a better second half team. And then they definitely showed it on paper and on TV, obviously. Chargers get the win, 39-29. Justin Herbert's first win as a starter. But, AJ, all good things must come to an end. We're talking the Seahawks. Perfect. But we're going to break all that down, but let's first take a break.
Hey, everybody. Executive producer Ian Costello here, coming to you from the Work From Home Coin Podcast Studios. When we started our podcasts back in February of 2019, we had no idea that we would end up here. Now, a year and a half later, tens of thousands of you are listening to hundreds of our podcasts, and we need to make some changes to grow even further. That's why, starting this week, you can find all of the Coin Podcasts in one place. The brand new Coin Podcast Network. From Beaver Smack to Writer's Block. From your weather to our constant coverage of the coronavirus pandemic and the protests in Portland. It is all available in one place. So, to keep hearing the podcasts you already love and to discover more of our exclusive audio content, head to coin.com/podcasts or search Coin, that's K-O-I-N, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Podbean. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus on the Coin Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Out of the Tunnel with Marcus Greaves and myself, AJ McCord. So, Marcus, like you mentioned, all good things must come to an end. And for the Seahawks, that is their undefeated record. We had pandemonium in the desert against Arizona, as tends to happen when these two teams meet, especially in the desert. So, Seahawks, making no excuses after this loss. They knew they had it. They knew they had it several times, and they just couldn't get it done. Here's head coach Pete Carroll.
There were so many opportunities to win the football game, and you know, it's we've been in these situations where we count on things to happen, and the right plays happen, and the right situations, and the right complementary play occurs, and we just missed it.
We just missed it.
They did just
miss it. It was bound to happen, man. I mean, they've relied on Russell Wilson and his sorcery late in the game all season.
Yeah, it was
bound to catch up with them.
Yeah, it was just absolute chaos, AJ. I mean, just the fact of that's how good the Seahawks are, though. People need to take that in consideration. That they had 3 different turnovers, right? Russell Wilson with 3 picks. I mean, and you
should have been a pick six.
Should have been a pick six, but DK Metcalf is an absolute animal. But just in general, you're right. They've been relying on these late game. I don't want to say luck, but they're good play late in games, right? When it comes down to it, okay, backs up against the wall, how are you going to respond? Every single time they've responded the right way, and they've found ways to overcome adversity. Eventually, it's going to catch up. You know, catch up to you. And Arizona's not a bad team. I mean, they have so many ways that they can hurt you on the offensive side, on the defensive side. They just threw a lot of different blitz packages, and they just made Russell Wilson struggle for the first time that we've seen all season. So it was only a matter of time if they kept riding this dangerous wave of we're going to wait to the very last minute or the very last couple seconds to find a way to win the game instead of earlier in the game. So it was only a matter of time, AJ, and it finally, you know, caught up to him and bit him in the butt.
And you know what? Russell Wilson was uncomfortable all evening. Mm-hmm. The person who was not uncomfortable, Kyler Murray.
Mm.
Zero sacks, zero QB hits. I think they had a whopping total of one pressure.
Oh, no.
One. In fact, according to Next Gen stats, Kyler Murray was pressured on just one of 48 dropbacks, 2.1% for those of you who can't do math in their head, like myself. The lowest pressure rate against any quarterback in a game this season with at least 14 pass attempts.
That's brutal.
Yikes. So it makes sense that when talking about what needs to change between Sunday and this Sunday, and certainly by the time they play the Cardinals again, Pete Carroll talking about the pressure.
You know, it really comes down to generating pressure on the quarterback, and it's not just the pass rushers, you know, it's all of it. We came out of the chutes early, you know, with pressuring and trying to get after it and create a compliment, you know, to the guys, the front four guys, and we're still there. I mean, we still have to do that. We have to make it more difficult on the quarterback by harassing them. You know, the whole key is that guy throwing it and making his decisions. We have to do a better job in a number of ways.
Yeah, Kyler Murray did not feel harassed at all.
Right.
Homeboy was at home.
Right.
He was eating his popcorn. He had his feet kicked up on the couch. He was like, I don't know if you saw this clip. There was one clip where he saw DeAndre Hopkins mm-hmm. in man coverage, and it slow-mo zooms in on his face. He sees DeAndre in man-on-man, and he laughs.
Yeah, that's...
He laughs! Mid-play!
You got to take that personal. That's the thing.
Disrespectful.
It is. And that's where you know that it's just too – that's what, someone has to make a play, because if I go back on the film and I watch that, that would piss me off if I'm a player.
Oh,
that would make me
I was offended, and right. I am not a Seahawks fan. I don't right. play. But, oh, my God, it's so disrespectful. But, honestly, he had every reason to laugh. The Seahawks gave up 519 total yards. 31 first downs. They gave up 100 plus yards rushing in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Fourth quarter.
And that's the thing, is just look at all of that, and they only lost by 3 points. That shows you how good this team can be. But they, again, we were talking about it the last couple of weeks. They cannot keep riding this dangerous wave and messing with the line of, okay, we can wait till the last 30 seconds to have Russell Wilson drive down the field, we kick a field goal, win the game. Or last couple seconds, they're in the red zone or they're on our 10-yard line and we get a fourth down stop. You can't keep doing that, because eventually you were going to run into a team that could overcome that too, just like the Cardinals did. But, yeah, AJ, once I saw that smile, I was like, man, that's so disrespectful. I almost patted up and I was like, man, I got to get out there, because that's
And, you know, to the Seahawks' credit, A, like you mentioned, they're very, very close. They almost won that game despite all the stats that we just listed. You also got to talk about all the players that are still gone, right? I mean, Jamal Adams has missed 3 games with that groin injury. Talked to Pete Carroll on Monday. Wouldn't commit to Adams making his return against the 49ers. I know Jamal wants to get back out there worse than anybody, but what they need him to do, you cannot be hampered at all by your groin. So right. He said, you know, it's just a matter of making sure that he can do everything we need him to do to the full extent that we need him to do it. And then the other person that I think could make a big difference is Damon Harrison, right? Where's Snacks?
Right.
Seahawks are hungry.
Yeah.
They need some help.
They need
some Snacks on the line.
They need every help that they can get, because you're right. Once guys start smiling before they throw the ball, what is the last thing that you could tell that they're worried about? Is the pressure, is you guys, right? Is a team you're playing. That's where people will say, maybe Kyler Murray's cocky. For me, I see that as in he's like, man, they made a mistake because they're not pressuring me. And on top of that, DeAndre Hopkins is in single coverage, you know, man coverage. So someone has to help them out. I don't know what they can do, because you can't really bring a lot of blitz packages because of how much your defensive backs have been struggling, especially when you don't have your playmaker Jamal Adams out there to be flying all over the field, right? Guys are going to be in man coverage. And I think a lot of people, if you cannot tell, are a lot more confident with the Seahawks having more defensive backs in maybe zone or whatever it is, compared to bringing a lot of pressure and having guys sit in single coverage, even against someone like, you know, obviously one of the best receivers in the game, DeAndre Hopkins.
For sure. And I think the other thing interesting too this week that we're going to find is, like, was this the breaking point? Does Seattle go out and say, okay, we've survived with this defense for the first 7 weeks, six games. Now, do we need to go get some help? Because the Cowboys are reportedly shopping Everson Griffin. That's a guy that they were interested in over the summer. That's a guy could absolutely help their pass rush. Now, he wouldn't be available with the COVID protocols. He wouldn't be available for like a week or two at least. Like, he would not be on the field against the 49ers, but you could potentially get him for the week afterwards. So I don't know. I asked Pete Carroll about that on Monday. And I mean, you know this, Marcus, and you probably remember it from dealing with the media, but these are questions that don't always get answered and cannot get answered, right? Like, the Seahawks can't tip their hand and be like, oh yeah, we're pursuing Everson Griffin hard. So I tried to ask Pete Carroll this question in a way that he could answer. And basically he said, you know, I asked him, do you keep tabs on players like Griffin who you were very interested in over the summer and who now might be available? And he said, yes. So that to me was confirmation. The Seahawks are interested in Everson Griffin. If he is on the table, they are coming to it because the Seahawks need some help. And I think what we've learned is that they cannot rely on, oh, when we get people back, then it'll be better. Nah. You got to go get somebody who's going to commit, who's going to play right now. So we'll see where that goes, Marcus, because the Seahawks certainly need some help. They got the 49ers on Sunday, another division game. Cannot lose those, especially with how good the NFC West is. So let's get into your keys, my friend, because there's some fun ones. So first and foremost, we talked about it. I call it pandemonium. You call it chaos.
Right. So there was this absolute chaos, AJ. I mean, between the Cardinals missing their late game field goal to unsportsmanlike conducts by Benson Moyoma that ended up being 7 points for the Cardinals. I mean, there was just so much that was going on. Then Russ's late game interceptions. I mean, it tugged on your emotions a lot because there's always those moments in games where you're like, okay, this is it, where the Seahawks are going to turn the corner and win the game, right? And we saw, again, last 7 weeks, whenever their backup was up against the wall, there was that moment where you're like, okay, now they're going to go win the game. You know, fourth and goal, whatever it is, Russell Wilson, give the ball to him, let him go do his thing. It just didn't end up like that. But that game, AJ, that game aged me like 10 years, 15 years watching that because I would get excited. I was like, oh, whoa, the Seahawks are going to win. And then a play would happen like an interception. I was like, oh, Seahawks are going to lose. But then the Cardinals missed a field goal. And I was like, oh, the Seahawks are going to win. And then another interception. I'm like, oh, so the Seahawks are going to lose. So it's just like the fact that it was tugging on your emotions all night. I mean, it was just absolute chaos. But those are the games that you love, AJ. And like we said, eventually the ball was not going to roll in the Seahawks' way. And we finally saw it for the first time.
And now it's a matter of what do you do with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, second key, of course, it's so unfortunate that this performance just got overshadowed by the loss because Tyler Lockett, my goodness, something.
Yeah, 15 receptions, 200 yards, 3 touchdowns, and my man was eating up one of the best defensive backs in the game in Patrick Peterson. He was manhandling him. And, AJ, on top of that, what's up with some of these catches? I mean, the one-handed grabs, like diving.
Oh, you can't do that?
Not anymore. But
yeah, me neither. Those powder puff days, you know.
Or even if it's just like his tiptoe in the back of the end zone, regardless, those catches that he makes are phenomenal. I mean, he might have the most entertaining catches out of anyone in the entire league. And that's me saying that over Odell Beckham, who obviously had the catch of the century. It's just Tyler Lockett is so great. I love what he does. He's a very hard worker. He's not going to sit there and, you know, be up in your face or be, you know, that look at me guy. He's just like, Russ, throw me the ball, man. Let me go make a play for you. And that's what I love about him. Again, like you said, it's a shame that the loss kind of overshadowed that huge performance. But, hey, if you're a fantasy owner of this guy, you like him. You're hyped.
If you're Tyler Lockett, you're stoked it finally came through.
Right.
So your third key, my friend, is Russell Wilson. The chef himself finally served up a subpar meal.
Right. And that's the thing. Subpar for Russell Wilson is still almost 400 yards passing and should have been 4 touchdowns. Right. But that one by DK Metcalf got called back. That is a subpar game. And I understand he didn't play super great. Some of the decision-making he had was not very good. But, again, 388 yards, three touchdowns, three interceptions, six carries, 84 yards. That's a subpar game for someone when you are the top guy in the MVP race. And I can understand that. And, again, like we said, eventually when you do nothing but put all your chips on Russell Wilson, if you're the Seahawks, he cannot do it all. That's why there's 10 other people on the field. Because he cannot do it alone. And in that game, more importantly for me, I saw right there, okay, nobody else wanted to step up to that big moment. Russ did. And then he couldn't do it alone. And that was the thing. The offensive line didn't really help him out. I know he only got sacked twice, but the amount of times that Russell Wilson, by the time he got the ball was snapped to him and hit his hands, he was already on the run. And this is a lot of the stuff that we saw last season where I was like, how can he still make the plays that he does with all of that? And now they're kind of starting to go back to it. And like you said, AJ, is this a turning point, not just for the defense, but for the offense saying, who else is going to step up? I know Tyler Lockett had a big game. DK Metcalf didn't have the best game, but especially in the run game. I mean, I know Carlos Hyde stepped up, 15 carries for 68 yards, but overall, when it matters most, that's when you want, obviously, not just your leader, but everyone else to elevate their game. I don't think everyone else elevated their game. I think Russ tried, and then it just didn't work because, again, there's 10 other people on the field, and everybody needs help. It does not matter who you are.
And that rushing game, Marcus, is not going to get any easier this week because Chris Carson is week to week with a midfoot sprain. Mm-hmm. So TBD on his availability on Sunday. Travis Homer has a bruised knee. Pete Carroll says he does have a chance to recover. So that means you're talking about Carlos Hyde and DJ Dallas, which Dallas had some good moments, but man, there was also one where he was fully, I think we were watching that play together. He was fully responsible for the sack on Russell Wilson. Just looked lost.
Yeah.
I mean, like didn't know which way to play. It was not good. It was not good. So Seahawks need some help on defense. Someone needs to step up on the offense. Can they do it this week against the 49ers team that is hitting their rhythm? We shall find out.
But on top of that, though, you were talking about running backs and Seahawks needing to sign somebody. I've been in the gym a little bit, AJ, so I'm available. I mean, I think I could probably run like a 4.8 40 now with both ACLs being torn and my ankles being all messed up. But, hey, if you need somebody to go in for like five solid plays, I think I got five solid plays. So
listen, man, between the two of us, we could probably be in for a whole series. I'll jump in there. I'll sacrifice my body.
I was going to say, you can have 10 plays. I'll have five.
I get trucked one time and I'm hospitalized. So you better make sure you call up the play. I'll get in there, take one for the team, live out my NFL dream, and then call it a day.
Oh, man. That's funny.
They're not that desperate. John Schneider isn't calling me yet, but I'll let him. I'll let him know you're free.
He will eventually. He got you, AJ. he heard that. He heard that you're a pretty darn good running back. So, AJ, but let's shift gears. I know we need to stop joking.
We're off the rails.
People are like, I'm tired of this already. You guys can't run. Anyways, AJ, let's talk about your community story. What do you got for us this week before we end the podcast?
All right, my friend. Well, so we're recording this on Tuesday, October 27th, and that means that we are officially 1 week away from Election Day, early voting ending in a lot of places right now. But, of course, you can still vote in person for the next week. And so I want to shine a light on the NFL and how they are helping make sure that every single I want to shine a light on the NFL. On how they're making sure that every vote and every voice is heard in this election. So the Seahawks are going to be able to, the Seahawks helps people register to vote, but there's stadiums around the country who are serving as voting sites. And so I'm going to go through them really quick in case any of our listeners are from states other than Oregon and Washington. The Colts have Lucas Oil Stadium is going to be open to Marion County voters. The Chargers and the Rams have opened up SoFi Stadium starting October 30th. So that's when you can go there if you're in LA to vote. The Falcons helped out earlier. The Panthers in Carolina, Bank of America Stadium is going to be used as an early voting site from October 15th to 31st. So you can do that through Halloween. Make sure you do that. The Lions are helping with their arena in Detroit. The Packers are going to be have this tailgate venue right next to Lambeau Field as a polling spot on November 3rd. So on Election Day, if you're in Green Bay, you can go there. Houston Texans, NRG Stadium, Arena, excuse me, you can go there through the 30th to vote. And then Kansas City Chiefs, Arrowhead Stadium, is going to be used as a polling site. The Eagles, Lincoln Financial Field, is a polling location. The Bucks are going to open as a early voting site October 19th to November 1st. You can go to Raymond James Stadium if you're in Hillsborough County. And the Washington football team, FedEx Field, is going to be open on Election Day from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. local time. I will put that list up on my Twitter so that if you guys missed it and are interested in it, you can go and find it. We all have a voice, Marcus, and I know that people are tired of the election. People are tired of talking about voting. I get it. Just go do it. And then next week, we won't talk about it anymore.
Right. Get out, vote, use your voice. It is your right, so you should take full advantage of that. That is all we have for you guys on this episode of Out of the Tunnel with AJ McCord and Marcus Greaves. Of course, you can always find us on all social media platforms. You can find AJ at AJ_McCord, me at Marcus_Greaves. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week.
See you then. Woot-woot.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.